sharing with you what I'm dealing with as a young, she was actually Nigerian American, as a young Nigerian American, and so many other things, trying to navigate school and so forth. You've listened to me. How could you walk into there and vote against me? That's what it sounds like.
That's what it felt like. Yeah,
well, now you tell me. Yeah, exactly. Because his policies are directly against me. And who knows if my family might be on the list to ask to be deported and so forth and so on. So what's the, so I think that that's one of the things I'm hearing is that people are really wondering, how do I trust?
Yeah.
Who do I count on? Who do I lean on? And really what I'm hearing people are going to start to kind of feel like they just want to go in. Yeah. So just like we're in the holiday season and it's like, I want to go in. Yeah. And I think people are saying just in general, I need time. I need a moment. I don't know what this means, but I'm hearing people say, I need a beat. I need to take a beat. Y'all just give me a moment.
Yep.
This is Salam and Hello, where stories of joy and justice vibrate with the rhythm of Africa and the diaspora.
Worry that group of people trying to move along the line. Maybe one day we'll get on.
Salam and hello, everyone. My name is Lily Bakala Piper, and thank you for joining us today. We are wrapping the year with some reflections with people who we really value, their insights, their thoughts, the inspiration and leadership that they bring to us. And you've gotten a chance to hear a little bit from Rahma and I. You're going to hear next week from a really inspiring leader in our Nairobi community. And today, I am just so happy to have somebody next to me on this couch who has been so many things to me. She has been a collaborator. She's been a friend and a sister. She has been a teacher and a mentor in so many ways. I jokingly call her my social activist bestie, but really, Robin Emerson is so much more than that. She is a woman who has really created a life of meaning and purpose, and she leads with intention. I have seen her lead in many different ways here in Kenya and in Nairobi. And if you know Robin, you'll know her perhaps as the founding president of Women in Real Estate Kenya, WIRE, one of Kenya's first gender-focused private sector organizations, really an important contribution to the real estate landscape here in Kenya. She's the founding chair of Women Lead NBI. She's the co-founder of the Kilimani Foundation Project, a really wonderful grassroots organization that gathers communities and people for fun, but also purpose and connection. And in the end, a lot of amazing initiatives have come out of that gathering. She's also the current chair of Democrats Abroad Kenya, DAKE, and has been chair for the last couple of years and really led that organization from its inception to what has become a really vibrant community of engaged citizens. Mm-hmm. Robin's leadership has been essential to just my own understanding of being a member of the diaspora, yet staying civically minded and civically engaged as I've built my life outside of, you know, where my passport country is, of the United States. Robin has been a friend who I turn to make sense of movements here in Kenya. She's a dual citizen of both Kenya and the United States. And whether there's an issue here in Nairobi that is of concern, be it the issues around femicide or social justice in 2020 and after the murder of Yasin Molo and George Floyd, or if it is current political movements and galvanizing around the nomination of Kamala Harris a few months ago, Robin's leadership is deeply felt by so very many of us who are involved here in Nairobi. And she really values, I think, what it means to be present, to be engaged, and to be intentional about what we do with our time and our energy and where we focus it. Where do we put our energy behind? So the election happened a few months ago, and not even a month. We're recording this on December 3rd. Just a few weeks ago, Donald Trump was elected as the next president of the United States. That election had a lot of meaning for us across the globe. We were here in Nairobi, but the ramifications of that decision has been felt globally. And I invited Robin today to help me just reflect on that moment. As a trusted friend and as a trusted leader, I really value her insights of making sense of how we got here, what it could mean, where are we going, what we should do. But also as a friend, just the experience of what it means to elect Donald Trump again to the United States. What is that experience like for us as Black women in the diaspora, as Black women here in Kenya, Black Americans who are balancing multiple identities. You know, what does that mean for us? And as the, at the human level, at the granular level. So I am just so grateful and honored that Robin Emerson, who wears so many very many hats, is sitting down with me today on Salam and Hello. So Robin, karibu sana. I'm so delighted to have you here.
Asante, Lily. I'm so extremely honored to be here, sister, with you so we can talk through this. I think that, as I was saying earlier, we have lost something that we were in a fight for. We were really in a fight for something, and it has been rejected. The possibility that we were standing for has been rejected. And so what does that mean for all of us? Have I been rejected? Have, you know, the things that exemplify me, have they been rejected? I think it's really, really wonderful that you've given the opportunity for us to sit and talk more about that.
Well, I'm grateful for having you here. I was, as I was preparing for this today, I was remembering that you were on one of my earliest episodes of Uproot. And that time we were talking with a group of other Black Americans about what the African-American experience was like in Kenya and then more broadly in Africa. And it was such a salient conversation about identity and belonging. And we come to a moment like these elections and those questions come up again. Identity, belonging, where do I fit? Where do I put my voice and my energy? And before we dive deep into some of the very important points you've already raised, you know, I've given you some titles and mentioned who you are, but when you meet someone, Robin, you know, how do you introduce yourself? How do you like to show up in spaces? Tell us a little bit more about you.
Yeah, thank you, Lily. It's quite interesting that when I do enter spaces or who I meet, I actually, it's kind of like, I morph. I'm really a chameleon in some sense. It's like, well, what's of interest are related to, you know, where I am in the spaces that I go. What I often love to do is welcome, kind of not welcome, but let people know that, hey, there are women in the built environment that, you know, there's only 1% are engineers in the built environment. Only 3% of the architects are women. Did you know that? Do you think that these spaces and cities and places where we go and design and live our lives, that it has the influence and the perspective of everyone in society? So I do kind of want people to know that, you know, the life that we live is by design. I was actually having this conversation with one of my mentees this morning. She said, do you know that I've heard that politics has influenced how Eastlands was designed? She's an urban planner also, like myself. And I said, okay, well, now we need to take some steps back, mentee, because urban planning is all politics.
Absolutely.
Why is it politics? Because you're moving somebody's cheese. Basically, if you're telling somebody, I'm going to need you to give a portion of that cheese, you know, that pie up so that someone else can have, all of that is politics. And if you're not versed in it, if you're not comfortable in how to navigate those spaces, you can't be an urban planner, well, as well as you possibly could be. But we're kind of leaving out the complexities of what it is for us to create a just and equitable society.
Yeah, that's so powerful. It actually makes so much sense at how why you're so politically minded as well, because all politics is personal.
That's
too, right?
Exactly.
No disaggregating and
local.
And local.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of the data from this election tells us once again that Black women voted overwhelmingly for the Democratic ticket, for Kamala Harris in this instance, and then before it was Hillary Clinton in 2016. We've had, of course, the 2020 election in between. Black women continue to vote in very strong numbers for a platform and for policies, I think, that not only benefit people of color, but benefit everyone. You know, they kind of carry forward the burden of, I think, the wellness of our larger society. This time, one of the data points that came out that was really troubling was that white women tipped in the majority for Trump, 56%. That says something. When you were sitting here in Nairobi and hearing the results come in, what did that say to you? What did some of these decisions that we're seeing happening in the United States say to you as a Black American woman in Nairobi, Kenya?
Yeah, I'm telling you this, you know, I've been listening also to several other people that, you know, probably you and I also respect and one of the interesting things, Lily, is that, you know, we're in abroad. And so our white friends, our white women, we would think that they're more liberal, and that's how we kind of would view them. But we we're almost a little bit shielded from.
Right.
Okay. We're a little bit shielded from, you know, maybe being in those spaces in grocery stores. That's what I'm hearing my sisters having a guarded concern about how they move around the world because they're just wondering, was it you that voted against me? Mm-hmm. Was it you, my colleague, sitting right next to me? Not to say that we don't have perhaps some, you know, some right-wing voters here as well, but I think the majority. So I think what I'm feeling from my our sisters back in the States is that kind of, well, I don't know who to trust. I don't know who to, you know, who's on my side, who sees me, who is for me, who's not for me. I heard an example of a young woman who was getting counseling from, you know, a counselor. And she went in after the election and shared with her the angst that you would share with your counselor. And the counselor basically said, well, you know, I voted for him. And she was saying, well, you've heard my, I've laid on this couch for you and for months sharing with you what I'm dealing with as a young, she was actually Nigerian American, as a young Nigerian American and so many other things, trying to navigate school and so forth. You've listened to me. How could you walk into there and vote against me? That's what it sounds like.
That's what it felt like.
Well, now you're telling me. Because his policies are directly against me. And who knows if my family might be on the list to ask to be deported and so forth and so on. So what's the, so I think that that's one of the things I'm hearing is that people are really wondering, how do I trust? Who do I count on? Who do I leave, you know, lean on? And really what I'm hearing people is people are going to start to kind of feel like they just want to go in. So just like we're in the holiday season and it's like, I want to go in and I think people are saying just in general, I need time. I need a moment. I don't know what this means, but I'm hearing people say, I need a beat. I need to take a beat. Y'all just give me a moment. But on the,
I was just going to reflect with you on that. The fact that, you know, this, people may hear that and think, well, why? It's elections come every 4 years. There's constant choosing and, you know, putting your faith into something and putting it elsewhere, maybe the next four. But this particular candidate has been so open and frank and clear, whether it's the federal courts that found him guilty of sexual assault, or if it was, you know, anecdotal data that we had of his abuse of other people, or on the record, rejecting and calling where we live, you know, a shithole country, there is enough evidence. So this candidate in particular embodied something that we haven't seen in quite the same shape or form in maybe the last several decades. And that particularly, I think, tugged at the trust. Being here in Nairobi, you have been very involved in, and are involved in the Democratic, Dems Abroad Kenya. It is an official organization, exists all over the world. There are chapters all over. This is only the second chapter in Africa,
right? That's right.
Before the nomination of Kamala Harris, how would you describe the energy of Democrats Abroad?
Well, you know, Lily, it was lukewarm. It was lukewarm. I think people were challenged by the candidate, the party's candidate up to that point for many reasons. I mean, I think, aside from him saying in his first, you know, in 2020 that I'm just going to do this once. And then we kept waiting. All right. Now's the time. But, you know, never switched over at that time. And of course, his age, I think, is, you know, was a big issue. I think that at some point we do want to be able to see other people come in and make space for it. He, of course, he did a great job, and we'll look back at his candidacy and his president era, that he did make a lot of, you know, policy changes that were for society overall very beneficial. But I did think that we were holding out for him to honor his promise, one, and then to, you know, just see the read the room, if you will. But then I think we had many other global issues and challenges that were really pulling at people's consideration about what America should be for. If it's, you know, how do we stand for that? And the, of course, the one with the on Gaza and what happened in Gaza, I think there's many people that were really saying, hold on one second. I think we need another direction here. I think that this is a mismatch for who we say that America is. And I don't see us doing a course correct or doing any changes. So I'm not certain if I can jump on this boat right now in the direction that it's going. So I know that that's where I was for sure. You know, as the chair of Democrats Abroad Kenya, I'm for a democracy. I'm standing for mine is where I've been is how can I make certain that the plate of voting is available for everyone? If that's a tenet of democracy, I don't want it to be interrupted. I don't want it to be hindered. I want it to be accessible and available for everyone.
Yeah.
So that was my role, and I honor it, and I'm very proud of how we've done that and who we've reached out to. But as a U.S. citizen and in the lens through which I move through life, of course, I've had many challenges to that, to what we, you know, how this happens. Don't know if you've been, if you've watched Ta-Nehisi Coates' book and the conversation that's coming back from the book, The Message.
Yeah.
It is, he put it in such a way that I couldn't articulate it so beautifully.
Yeah.
You know, when he says and he sees what's happening, he's like, wait a minute, I'm a Black man saying this.
Yeah.
I can only call this what I know it to be.
Jim Crow. This is familiar.
Yeah, exactly.
This is familiar.
Right, exactly. He said, I don't need you to validate and put run this through any political analysis or anything for me. My lens is valid. And it feels just like, it feels just like what we were saying that America had stood up for.
Yeah.
We hold up Martin Luther King, but then we, you know, so I get the angst. And so I think that that was a real challenge.
Before the nomination of Kamala Harris, all those things together, it was hard to galvanize people. It was hard to get anyone feel hopeful. Mm. When Trump survived the second assassination attempt, or the first one, I think we were like, it's over. He's won, basically. Like this image of, you know, him coming back, coupled with a candidate who we didn't feel we could trust as well, let us feel quite dismayed. And I want us to come back to Gaza because I think what Ta-Nehisi Coates is saying about how he experienced it as a Black man, Africans said the same thing, right? We know what this is. This is apartheid. We see this.
That's
we recognize it. There's no need to
yes.
to scratch. This is on the surface. Right. There's no need to scratch the surface. Then candidate Harris, Vice President Harris, is nominated, and we see a dramatic shift in the energy around her candidacy. Her platform, maybe less so, but it was a very fast and short campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you experienced that shift in candidacy and what you saw here in Nairobi that was probably reflected across those of us who, you know, live outside the United States and are voting and engaged elsewhere. What was that shift like for you?
Well, kind of coming from, let me just come from inside the Democratic Party.
Sure.
Right. And as you led this conversation talking about Black women.
Yeah.
You know, so at that moment when we saw it look, well, we know from the debate, I think that's where we saw the slip up that was starting to, and it, of course, many people started to say, this is the time, this is the time. We don't think that you have what's necessary to carry this. So as that conversation was rising, Black women were saying, hey, that's nice. Y'all might be having these conversations, but don't you dare.
Yeah.
Don't you dare think you're going to put somebody else in, because there were all these conversations, right? Of all the other potential people that could, you know, take in and run Black women from Mignon Moore to, you know, Donna Brazil to all of these other high women in the party said, no, you will not overstep a very capable, actually not just a very capable, the most capable candidate
we've
ever had for president.
Yeah.
So just kind of coming back to Black women's role in politics, or even society has just always been the bellwether, if you will, the bellwether that no, this cannot happen. And that's what I was extremely proud of, is that we didn't, you know, allow our excitement for the possibility of someone else to step over somebody that was right there and ready.
Absolutely.
And so that was a moment that I think I felt the most pride that, okay, that's
same.
Right. Yeah, that, well, here we go. Here we go.
Yeah, and you used the word earlier, rejection. And I think the inverse of that is probably what you felt it like.
Yes, right.
It's time.
That's right.
Or like this sense of just the the saliency and the importance of this moment. Yeah. And like you said, in a qualified, competent leader who was ready.
And they know Black women's voting potential. Yes,
exactly.
So there was, of course they had to weigh the, because if, just imagine if she had been sidestepped.
Right, right.
Black women, if we're feeling like we don't know where we go from here, at that moment, if we would have gotten 60% of Black women, might have been the highest that we would have possibly gotten. Because I'm for sure we would have said, no, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it would have been very, as much as they were courting Black men or thinking they needed to court men, if she wasn't on the ticket, I think it would have been even more detrimental.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we saw a lot of energy here in Nairobi in terms of people getting, well, at least I did, I'm also a member of DAKE. So a lot of people getting engaged, volunteering. It was pretty incredible, pretty inspiring because it was maintained over the 4 months. It was like a constant momentum of energy and excitement and organizing. By being outside of the U.S., though, when this is happening, like you said, we weren't getting that grocery store conversation maybe that our friends and sisters were having in the U.S. that maybe kind of gave them red flags of how this was going to go. Mm-hmm. In Nairobi, in this environment, how confident were you that this could be a successful campaign for Vice President Harris?
Oh, man. Even leading up to there was a word that we all were saying. What do you say?
Cautiously optimistic.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's how everybody was just leaving it. Yeah. I don't want to count the beans too early. I don't want to read the tea leaves too early. I think we all were just... So I think that we were seeing the numbers even. Mm-hmm. We were seeing the numbers that they were a lower number of even people that were registering than 2020 from Democrats abroad.
Okay.
From 2020 and 2016. It was a lower number. Mm-hmm. Of course, in 2020, when we had the pandemic, it was our first time that we were going virtual or online voting. And it was a high number. And of course, people were, again, you know, you had Trump there as well. But I think that this election, we were all like, maybe we can eke this out. Right?
Yeah,
maybe we can eke this out. Yeah. It might not be a landslide. Mm-hmm. It might not be a wash, but I think that we have enough to tip it over, if you will.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. What was interesting this time is what was reliable. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the challenges that we really had was what was reliable.
Yeah.
Was it the polls reliable? Were the data reliable?
Yeah.
Were what people were telling, you know, the pollsters and us, was that
reliable?
Or even
telling us when we're canvassing
telling us. Was that reliable?
Yeah.
So I think that that's one of the things that we were really looking back on is, you know, how do we base, you know, where people's sentiments are?
Yeah.
I think that this relationship, election is kind of altered kind of what we are, what's the truth, if you will, right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's going to alter what's the truth, what do we form and develop our strategies based on. And then now you're grasping at straws now.
Yeah,
you're grabbing at the air now. If what people say, if what people are putting out is important, is that really the thing that's important?
Yeah, yeah.
Or are we now starting to get into echo chambers and we're just saying stuff over and over again, but we really don't know.
Yeah.
Is there something else that's to poke people over? I think this is kind of just this moment has rearranged our society, if you will.
Absolutely.
We didn't just have an election. We've now said, are we going to have somebody that is quoting Hitler quotes? Like they're going to be doing, you know, that's somebody that's doing Hitler quotes. That's what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's now bullying BRICS and is saying now, you know, get in order, BRICS. You know, are we saying that or how? It wasn't just an election.
Yeah,
that's what I think what we're saying. We're now saying, what's the next trajectory of America?
Absolutely.
I think that that's really what we have just are going through, if you will. Yeah,
we saw such interesting reactions here on the continent. I remember the day after, or, you know, because I think another thing was how quickly we knew.
Yeah.
I think all of us, at least in Demos Abroad and other circles I was in, were like, kind of,
it's going to take a couple
days.
Yeah,
it's going to be a while. Maybe by Friday, we'll know.
Something.
Oh, no, it was within 12 hours so.
Yeah.
We knew.
Yeah.
And we saw reactions on the ground here in Kenya, in my native Ethiopia, just you know, seeing what I saw on social media, people excited about a Trump presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And The only sense I've been able to make out of that, and it's not a really solid case, is that maybe there's something familiar about the rhetoric of this kind of authoritarian-leaning leader, this kind of command in his voice, this very masculine energy that resonates with a country that still struggles with patriarchy. That's what I've. That's how I've made sense of it. How are you making sense of some of the reactions we've seen on the continent?
Yeah, that's a really great one. I think. I'm listening also, and I've heard several people as well. Glad about Trump. Now, we already know that a lot of people from Africa are actually also conservative thinking
true,
as well.
True, true.
And so even many of them were Republican as well.
Yes,
but
true.
Now we're talking Trump, right, which is a different
Bollywood. Right? Yeah.
Yes. So we already knew that many of them are Republican leaning. So I think that there's a couple of things. You're right. This kind of similar kind of authoritarian, like you just said, that's very similar to me. That's somebody that I think that I've experienced leadership for years and years.
Right.
That must be.
Where's a black
way,
woman,
right,
South Asian also, what is she?
Exactly. Yeah. That must be the way that leadership is done. But I was looking at something that was quite interesting, which inside of the decolonization, down with imperialism, I think that some people it's riding in as like, it's time for y'all to, fail. It's time for y'all to come down on whatever horse you've been riding on. Even somebody was saying that Trump is actually, before Trump, we might have had some niceties and some protocols about how we rule.
Right.
But now he's thrown all that aside. And the ruling is still there. So he's just kind of like, hey, I'm not going to, I'm going to throw out all foreign affairs conventions.
Right.
And I'm just going to say it.
And we're going to say all the things that America was already saying without the manners.
That's right.
We're going to get rid of manners.
Exactly.
Goodness gracious.
And
you're right. And that's how people experience American development,
right, exactly.
American help or aid.
Exactly.
They experience it in the Trump way, a lot of dominion.
That's right.
And now they're just saying, but this is who
you've always been driving and steering how currency is done. You've always been doing that. What's the deal that he
taste your own medicine?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
That feels very accurate.
So I found that to be quite interesting.
Interesting. There is some talk as well. I've just been reading some voices that I follow who are Tressie McMillan Cottom comes to mind. She's a sociologist at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, but she writes for the New York Times as well. She's a Black woman. She's an author. She's brilliant. She has kind of given some voice and platform, as well as other Black women, to this idea that basically we as Black women, we're no longer going to shoulder the burden of democracy for you, all of you, white women, white men, Latino community. We have always shown up for the policies from the local election boards, or like school boards at our local elections, to the highest office of this land. We have been a through line, and we're going to need to take a step back. So when you're calling for us to march again, we're going to opt out. Does that resonate to you? You are a woman who has been deeply involved in your community, both here in Nairobi for many years, in the States, leading. You're not even in America and you're leading Americans, So how do you feel right now? Where does your energy level at?
I hear that also. And I think there's a women's march that's being planned. Black women are like, march. We done the march.
Yeah, we've been marching.
It's natural, right? Mm-hmm. It's human, right? Because, like I said, you feel like a message has been given to you, and people are saying, "I'm picking up what you have put down."
Yes.
So don't be upset when I start to now, operate consistent with what I think you've told me, and I think that is natural. Even somebody was saying, I want to see us have a little bit of pettiness. Let us just lean into the pettiness for just a little. Yeah, it's fine, right?
Sometimes, I feel that.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you're in an argument, you're like, okay, for just one more week,
you're
ugly.
Yeah,
exactly.
At least I'm not ugly, America.
All right, so let us just, go through a little pettiness. I think that that's fine. But I, we will continue to lead. I think this is just a period. This is just a moment. We will, because it's like who we are. There's a humanity inside of us that if we see somebody hurting, we're going to want to step in. Mm-hmm. We're going to want to say something. But I do think we do want to hear some more from some of our other counterparts. I think that when we talk about Latinos, when we talk about, you know, every other, you know, LGBTQ, mm-hmm. I think people want to hear you say, stand up for the Black women.
Yeah.
When is somebody going to? And of course, we saw, which was so cute, and all of the Zoom calls that happened after the Black woman started their first woman came back and said, "All righty, you know, we're getting information."
Yeah.
But I think that now, have we heard some of these same groups come back and say, "All righty,
we got you now too."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're going back to our meetings with our group, and we promise you we're going to do better. Something is off here that has you be heard and seen. But I think it's valid for women to say, you know, listen, I'm taking a break for just a moment. But I also think that we're gonna come back.
Yeah.
We're definitely gonna come back, and we're gonna lead, because it's just that we will not stand for injustice. We won't stand for injustice in our homes and in our families and in our society. We are gonna say something. We are gonna voice. I don't think that that's gonna be long. But so we're just like declaring a season of pettiness.
A season of pettiness. Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. Just declaring a season of pettiness.
We've earned that. We've earned as much.
Yeah,
earned
exactly.
as much.
Just give a moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you acknowledge it, you're like, it's not that you're even being nasty. You're just clear. Listen, I need a moment.
I need a moment.
Yeah, just give me a few moments.
You know, it makes me think of like all of our mothers at some point be like, you've gotten on my last nerve.
Exactly.
Like, I'm going to step away because I cannot deal with you anymore.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's basically what you're just saying.
Yeah.
Just give me a minute. Just give me a minute.
Yeah, don't
mess it. That's right. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that brings us to this idea of just kind of what to expect next. I mean, we're going to take a minute, whatever we need to do what we need to do next. But we are sitting on the verge of 4 years of Trump. We've started to see some of his nominations come out, overwhelmingly met with concern by Democrats and Republicans alike, I would say. It's not fair to ask you to kind of put your predictions out there about the impact of what that means for the continent, because we've had a Trump presidency and we know that his agenda around America First will continue, and it'll probably be more specific, more intolerable in places, more, you know, heavy-handed in others. But as you look ahead to these next 4 years, I guess, what are you expecting? And I would say probably less from the government and more from the people, right? Mm-hmm. Like from how we experience it, because we're all people sharing a space.
Yeah.
And secondly, do you have like a self-care, self-preservation, something that's going to help you navigate it? You know, what are some practices you're putting in place as you look ahead? Because you're an engaged person, Robin. You do not do things halfway. You go all in. So I would really love to hear from you, you know, kind of what you're expecting and how you're going to manage it.
Yeah. Well, listen, Trump is, the guardrails are off.
Yeah.
Okay. The guardrails are off. He was on a trial run on his first, the cycle, this one. He's going to lean in. He's already told us in Project 25 exactly what he plans to do, how he plans to do it. Federal agencies and policies abroad. He's already told us, and he's implementing it. And so all of this that people were saying, no, I know nothing about it. We got hoodwinked. And we were led astray, and we followed that route. And so here in Africa, on the continent, last time he cut federal funding, well, just federal foreign aid by 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he is an isolationist, and he wants that American First. And he will say anything that is not in our own personal interest, for the most part, as a country, in his view, he's not going to feed into it. And he doesn't think that anything else is worthy of that attention. It's not just America. Of course, mm-hmm. like we have NATO. We have, you know, all these other policies. He's already, you know, pissing off Mexico.
Yeah,
Canada, and Kim Jong-un has even responded. His old friend is saying, hey, dude. So I think that it's going to, as they say, buckle up, buttercup. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting ride.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that mean for healthcare here on the continent? What does that mean for education and other development projects? I think that they're going to get it's going to be interesting to see how much, you know, how far a project has been put, you know,
what the runway is going to look like.
Because I think at some point we're going to feel here on the ground, the people that we live with, the country that we reside and, mm-hmm. And benefit for that good development to continue. I think that we're also going to feel it. But as Americans, we do have a voice. And mm-hmm. so we should be writing back in some way, in every way, if it's our congressman, if it's our senator, to let them know those policies are extremely important and they shouldn't be sidelined or messed with. And I just think that we have to stay vigilant in some way. Yeah. And so I think that as you talk about this future, or somebody says that after we get past the season of pettiness.
Yes, right. Yeah, after that, we get there. Yes.
We are going into the era of resistance. Mm. Is and so, you know, we just have to be attuned. We have to say who's on watch on these different items. Let us know where to pivot and where to get into action. I think we need to connect into those different spaces. If it's women issues, if it's gun policy, if it's mm-hmm. whatever those are, we need to have somebody that is on watch and that we're paying attention to, and we're seeing if the, you know, funny policies are coming in or our proposals who are coming in. We need somebody to be able to say, no, this is unacceptable. This is taking us in a direction that we will not be able to recover from. And so I think we all should, you know, figure out what is my corner, my era, my area, and just get in there and just watch it and pay attention to it and keep people as informed as you are.
Yeah.
And then
I just want to say, just reflect on that, just to say, you know, it reminds me of what Michelle Obama, kind of her charge at the national convention was, you know, you don't have to do everything, but do something. So like, what is your issue?
That's right.
Find voices that are leading, lean into that support, be active, be involved. Exactly. And I think that's really helpful to think about. Yeah. We're not going to, we can resist in one place.
Yes.
So find that issue
find
for you.
Thing.
That's
right.
Really helpful advice. So how are you going to manage it? How are you going to navigate?
Well,
be real now.
I am. So it's so funny, after the election, you know, we had a watch party. We were so excited. We thought, yes, we're going to be together and see this
historic
woman.
Moment.
I'm telling you.
Yes.
And Lily, the pictures that we have from that event, they look like not even a funeral. They look like we had all just watched a train just smash into something.
Yeah.
It's so funny, all the photos of people's reactions there. And so just a couple of hours after that party, I had to get on a plane to go to a conference. And actually, that was the best relief ever. I didn't have to stay immersed in the angst and the disappointment too long. But then I was listening to Iyanla VanZant had she was taking people through their emotions after that election. So between what I got from participating in one of her open sessions and then some of the work that I do in terms of transformation, and transformation allows me to see, the work of transformation allows me to continue to ask myself, is what I'm seeing true?
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing true? And I'm telling you, that was my mantra that whole rest of that day. And what I mean by is, what am I saying? Is it really going to be horrible? Right. It hasn't happened yet.
Right.
Is it really going to be horrible? Are we in really a whatever, you know, an era of doom and gloom? I had to keep asking myself, because what it does is it keeps on imagining three other responses to that question, or even 10 other responses to those questions. And then I can hold on to just one of those. I don't have to hold on to just the one that it's being fed to me over and over again.
Right?
Yeah. The one that I can imagine, you know, possibly, well, who knows what's going to come out of this season? You know, it's already predestined. We're already up for the fight. Let's go ahead. So that's kind of one of the things.
Very positive.
Well, it's not even so much. I'm telling you, I had to do it for not losing my mind, if you will. So I'm not, this is really not a...
It's not theoretical.
Yeah, no.
This was the practice that you were in.
Yeah, completely.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
sure.
I had to literally hour, moment, thought by thought.
I had the thought by thought
just stop it. And because otherwise I was going down, what the heck have we just done? You know, what did we just elect somebody with 34 counts and are saying that your... your understanding of integrity is the integrity that we need to. Did we just say that? Did we just say that somebody, you know, who circles around himself with people who say your body is my body?
Yeah.
Did we just do that? Is that what we're now saying? You know, I literally
just had to arrest those thoughts
completely.
Yeah, take them captive, as the scripture would say.
Exactly. Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. I had, because otherwise I was so upset.
Yeah. I mean, I found myself just compartmentalizing.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't also process it. So I was just creating a little box. Being like, I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this, what just happened, into that I knew it was going to happen box. Mm. And I will deal with you when I can get to you.
Yeah.
Because it was just overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's overwhelming.
So now that's that, you know, that's that. And then not to also be too esoterical.
That's okay, Rob. Yeah. Go ahead.
But I'm telling you, when I go out and I bring stuff out, it allows me to just be in this moment and see the hilarity of it, if you will. Mm. Right. In the hilarity of it. And so I think that, you know, as we are going through this journey, it is gonna be, we are going to have enough stuff to react to on a daily basis, an hour by hour basis. And there is no doubt that somebody on his team is going to say something that offends the likes of us, mm-hmm. that offends the likes of people we love, that offends the people that we hold dear. And even is going to offend the people we don't hold dear, but we see them as human beings also.
Yeah.
And so I think that we're going to, this is probably, not to be fun, but this is probably our own faith building is going to get tested here in just a few moments here over this journey. We are going to be tested, and it's going to be saying that, listen, are you sitting on the hill that's looking over, you know, the city, or are you going to be somebody that's in despair and somebody that is crying and is just weeping? I mean, we are completely in a test.
Yeah.
Completely.
So how do you manage the test as you look ahead at navigating the space as a Black American woman living outside of that country for the most part? Mm-hmm. You're in Kenya more than you are anywhere else. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you kind of, I guess, take care of yourself? One, find the right balance of where you put your energy and your effort. Because there's, like you said, that pettiness. Some people might be like, actually, pettiness feels great. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stick this out for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just trying to figure out how you're going to live. How are you going to live, Robin, and remain as vibrant and engaged and curious as you have been, given the context?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I'm asking myself that. I am asking myself that also regularly. My term with Democrats Abroad comes up next year in April. You know, I'm asking myself, do I want to continue to, how do I continue to drive people to be interested and involved in a party that has failed, if you just to some degree?
Yep.
How do I, you know, even just for myself, but how do I get others to want to still be involved and participate? How am I going to continue to raise up the questions and the issues that are so affecting us day to day here in Kenya? And we can feel removed, you know, but that's the other part. And not just only the season of pettiness, us abroad could actually say the season of shutdown.
Wait,
I can shut you people down almost completely to some degree. And how do I not go into that? You see, the thing is that whatever we think that we're doing to someone else, unfortunately, this, you know, universal thing, it comes back to us. And so oftentimes, you know, there's this long view of, okay, do I want to be shut out? Do I want to shut somebody out? Do I want to stay in pettiness for forever? Because I do know that inside of pettiness, either if it's in relationships, right? If I say this, I'm not going to call you back. I'm not going to call you back. I'm not going to call. Yeah. That eats away at me.
Right.
That eats away at me because I'm the one that has to keep up the pettiness.
Right.
And oftentimes that pettiness doesn't just stay with you.
Trump is going on, or whoever's going on about their business.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the pettiness doesn't just stay here. It often spills over into many other areas of my life where I now become a petty person.
Yeah.
And then I'm petty everywhere.
Yeah.
And so the question I have to ask myself is, does it still matter? Mm-hmm. Does it still matter, Robin? Do you have the courage to still care? Do you have the courage to still love? Sometimes it ain't right there, but I do have to ask myself, right? Mm-hmm. What are you afraid of? Well, heck, nobody might not want to play with me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's this, that kind of basic. Yeah. You know, will Lily pick up my phone call and ask her to come and do a DIMS thing? Would we just, you know, those kind of things I have to literally every day jump over to some degree. It's not an automatic, get up and do something.
Yeah.
There are literally, will somebody want to play with me? How are they going to feel? This, that, and the other.
Mm. And this is why Black women hold up all the world. I mean, what I'm hearing you say, there's a discipline to courage. Mm-hmm. There's a discipline to being engaged and being alive.
Yeah.
Like it's, no one wakes up with the tenacity to push through.
That's right.
And I think our ancestors, that's what they always had to do. Yeah. They had to push through another bad policy, another bad leader, another bad circumstance, and have a vision for something bigger and better. And that was a discipline of hope, even. And I see you live that out in so many places. Mm. I didn't invite you on to really have the answers, but I did want to invite you on because I wanted to help my own processing and understanding of kind of what's next with somebody I trust so deeply and appreciate you so deeply because you go all in. We've talked for about 40 minutes, so I'm sensitive to time and just want to ask you as a parting question, two things. I'll ask the second one after you answer the first.
Okay.
One is you've given us already some handles, some advice on how to go forward between taking a break to, you know, this discipline that you've just alluded to young voters, first-time voters. We had some amazing young people involved in Democrats Abroad. I'm thinking of you, Mohammed, you know, really involved for the first time and leading. What do you say to those individuals who really feel really put off by this and how they carry on? So let me ask you that first and I'll come to my closing question.
All right, great. Well, I think I reflect on my own early or political involvement journey, if you will. So I was reflecting on it earlier today in that when I was 17, Jesse Jackson was running in 88. So I didn't get to vote for him. But between 88 and 92, I had a child. So I was thinking when I was 19, I had a child. So in my next voting, I got to vote for Jesse. And then I started working for an elective office in 91. I started in the state of Texas. I worked for an elected official in the state of Texas and got involved in state politics there. And then in 92, started working for Clinton, if you will. That's it. And so we were very involved. Ann Richards was also now our governor.
Ann
Richards. So I thought that this was this was politics.
Yeah.
I thought this is
like we just win.
That's right. We just
all we do is win, 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 no matter what.
Yes. Hey. Yes. Okay. What you say?
Yeah.
I was like, we were on top, and you know, Democratic Party ran Texas, and we were just having such a good time. And I remember the aspirations and so forth. And then, of course, in 96 and 98, let me see, I want to confirm. So in 96 and 98, I ran a campaign, I worked on a campaign with Gary Morrow against George W. Bush. You may have heard of him.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I was over the statewide outreach to get everybody out in all the different counties. And we knew it was almost a no-win election or campaign. But Gary put himself in because he said, kind of like Biden, somebody has to run.
Yeah,
we have to stop this. Somebody has to run. And then in June 7th, 1998, the summer of that campaign, a man by the name of James Byrd was lynched in Texas. And I'm saying this because over those times, I was young and growing, and I was seeing what politics can do and what it does do and what it has the potential to do and the responsibility of. And I feel more and more in love with it and responsible for it, if you will. And so when that that young man was lynched in Southeast Texas, I said, my goodness, what year is it? What is it 17 something or 16 something? No, it was 1998. And so we lost that election. We lost it bigly, very, very big. And then I stayed involved in politics. And then in 2002, I worked another gubernatorial campaign where this person, Tony Sanchez, was running against Rick Perry. Because Rick had stepped in for Bush after he went to the presidency. And there were times during there, in between, I ran small commissioner campaigns. I ran small city council campaigns. And I can remember, why I'm saying this to these young people, is I can remember there was a campaign we had no money, absolutely no money, and leafleting still needed to happen.
Yeah.
It still needed to happen. And so, Lily, I literally, every morning for 6 hours, I would get up and walk by myself. Mm. And I can see it, and I can see myself walking up that hill. I can see myself put those things in there. I can see myself probably into the 100th door wondering, what the heck are you doing out here by yourself? And still with the stack of leaflets in my hand, I had to keep going. And then we lost that election. And I actually went into a depression. Mm. I actually was saying, Lord, what?
This does not work.
Completely. Yeah. I said, well, what is happening? Yeah. What are we doing? Am I on the wrong side here? What, you know, is this a waste of my time and a waste of my life? What am I doing? Why am I out here? So I think what I found during that time was I found what mattered to me. I really found what was important to me. I really found what was worth the fight, if you will. And that is what I'm telling you has kept me going, if you will. It has shaped my professional view. It has shaped my spiritual view. It has shaped my relational view, because now I'm only into what matters, and the rest, I can be very focused. Exactly. It is extremely clear. I don't waste time on things that are inconsequential or whatever. I know the dog I'm behind and I'm fighting, and it's not people. It's ideals and it's, you know, possibilities. So I think it's okay to take a knock, because it's, you know, when you something, it's showing you cared, and it's showing that something, but keep refining it, keep, teasing it a little bit more. What is it that that I was hoping for?
Yeah.
What is it that was important to me? And how do I keep bringing it alive?
It's so, so powerful, finding your why and the letting the rest, it becomes so clear and crystal.
Yeah.
So powerful. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Before we let you go, we like to end our show, and I kind of forgot the last episode when I interviewed somebody, but just being near you, I'm very quickly reminded that so much of what we do and your work is informed by joy as well.
Yeah.
So before we let you go, Robin, tell me, what is bringing you joy today?
Oh, man, what's this bringing me joy? Oh, what's bringing me to joy? And today, what's bringing me joy is I've gotten an invitation from a young lady who has cerebral palsy, and she's written a book, and her book launches this afternoon.
Fantastic.
And I'm going to go to her book launch this afternoon.
Aww,
and
awesome.
I'm just so excited to go to her book launch. She's extraordinary, and she's
Do you want to say? Do you want to say anything about the book, the name, or the author?
Her name is Zawadi.
Mariah,
and Zawadi, I'm just so excited for you, and so honored to be your friend, and so glad that you've invited me, and I can't wait to be there and get that book. Yeah,
fantastic. Well, and we'll put the link in the show notes to the book.
Great.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Robin, thank you for coming on. It's not an easy topic at the end of a very, very full year to kind of wrestle with, but I always appreciate that. Yeah, I consider you both my sister and my teacher. So thank you for being with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You.
And listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something, maybe about yourself or what's ahead or how you can process and be present in all of that's ahead.
We still have another episode for you before the end of the year. So please come back next week and like, subscribe, share the show. It means so, so much to us. And we love hearing from you. So you can always reach us on Instagram and I think on TikTok. I think we're still on TikTok at Salam and Hello, S-E-L-A-M and Hello. We'd love to hear from you. And until we meet again, be well.
Trying to move along.